ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसन्ददामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम्. Chapter 2, verse 20. Najayate mriyate vakadachat. Najayate mriyate vakadachat. Nayam bhutva bhavitavana bhuyaha. Nayam bhutva bhavitavana bhuyaha. Ajo nitya shashvato yam puranaha. Ajo nitya shashvato yam puranaha. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Najayate mriyate va kadachit na ayam bhutva. There should be an avagraha there, or that ah should go all the way across, because it's bhutva abhavita. So there's, I think there's a typo in the this version. Is it okay? It should be bhutva bhavita va nabuyaha ajaha nityaha shashvataha ayam puranaha nahanyate hanyamane sharire. We looked at this a little bit last week, but I'm going to start from here. 2 weeks ago. Najayate mriyate va kadachit. Na kadachit. Kadachit means sometimes. Na kadachit means never. It's a difference. Kadachit sometimes, then you think na kadachit might be not sometimes. Right? But it means never. Na kadachit. Never at any time. Jayate mriyate va. Ayam, na ayam. Najayate mriyate va kadachit. Never at any time, ayam this, atma, ayam atma. Never at any time is this self born. Najayate, it is not born. Na mriyate, nor does it die. Ever. There's no birth for it, there's no death.
Oh, I thought that was lightning. I mean thunder.
Good time.
I think it's a plane.
Super. That's not as dramatic.
Najayate mriyate va kadachit. Na ayam bhutva. This ayam atma, this self, this atma. Notice this is important. It's not that atma, that big self to be discovered. It's ayam atma, this self that I am. So ayam atma, this self. Na bhutva abhavita. Bhutva means being, existing. It's an indefinable past participle. And it shows sequential action. So this bhutva, this being, itself being, na abhavita. Abhavita will not be. Double negative. Bhavita means will be. Abhavita will not be. Na abhavita will not be. You see? So bhutva, this atma, being, existing, having been, having existing, will not be. It will never go out of existence. So namriyate, for it there is no death. So existing, it will not go into non-existence, like everything else in the creation does. When something is, it exists, it then will, in the end, not exist. It'll die. So everything is born and everything dies. Here, this atma, having been, being here, it will not be. So, bhutva abhavita, vana bhuyaha, or the opposite, nor again, negate that, or again, na, negate that whole thing, which would be, having not been, will not become. Right? Having not been, will not become. So, in other words, being, it will not not be. Not being, it will not become. For what the idea is there? For it, there's no birth. There's no becoming. It won't go from non-existence into existence. Like everything else that is born, it goes from non-existence into existence. Then there's the other, there's that Nijayate, for that there's no birth. And everything else that goes from non-existence into existence, and then from existence into non-existence. That's not the Atma. The Atma doesn't go through that process, nor does it go through the process of coming into being. So this Atma, Nijayate, Namriyate, Va, there is never at any time any birth for it, nor is there any death. So then, that Atma, this Atma, Ayam Atma, it is Ajaha, therefore Ajaha, free from birth. Nityaha, timeless, free from death. We'll see in the next verse, there's what's called the Shad Bhava Vikaras. Very important thing to understand, and simple, but nice way to classify things. The Shad Bhava Vikaras. Vikara means a modification or a change. Shad means six. Shad Bhava Vikaras means the six modifications that an existent thing goes through. So something, something that has been, something that exists in the creation, it goes through six modifications. Shad means six. So Shad Bhava, the Bhava means an existent thing, Vikara modification. Shad Bhava Vikaras. They are Jayate. First the thing is born, Jayate. Then it is. It's born and now it is. It's come into being. So Jayate Asti. Then Vardhate. It grows. It increases. It grows. Then Viparinamate. It modifies and transforms, for a living being goes through puberty. Viparinamate. Then Apakshiyate. Then it grows old and decays. Right? Then Vinashyati. It passes away, it dies. So a lot of times we'll just, the Vinashyati is Mriyate. So if you have the Shad Bhava Vikaras, starting with Jayate, it is born, and Mriyate, it dies, and you get rid of those two, you get rid of either end, then all of these modifications in the middle are taken for granted to not apply. Because the thing doesn't come into being, it doesn't go out of being, and so therefore it is changeless. So ajaha means free from birth, Nijayate. Nityaha, timeless, free from death. So ajaha, nityaha, free from time. So we can take that for the Mriyate. Then, just in case the Shad Bhava Vikaras are not adequately negated in your mind by this Jayate and Mriyate, it says Shashwataha. Shashwataha means that which doesn't go through any modification. So say it's not born, it doesn't die, and in the middle, it doesn't change. Right? So it's shashvata means that which is absolutely changeless. As it is, stays as it is. Then, staying as it is, it's puranaha. Puranaha means, nava means that which is new. Pura means even in antiquity it is new. That which is new now and in the past is new. It is always new. It is always fresh. Because never modifies, right? It never wanes. So the self that the self is now is always new. It is always fresh. New in the sense of being fresh, right? Because it doesn't age. That's Puranaha. Sometimes Puranaha is translated as ever new, right? If you go through time in terms of the creation, everything is changing and aging. But the self is the timeless presence. That's a nice way to understand it. When we look at the alterations of time, past, present, future, and everything modifying within the creation, all of that modification, that aging, that change, the decay, takes place in the presence of the Atma. The presence, which is the Atma, is ever fresh. It's ever new. It's not going through a process of past, present, future. And so it's not subject to any type of modification or change or aging. So the being that you are now is the being that a billion years ago you were. This being that you are now, because it is changeless, is the exact being that illumines the creation a billion years ago and will illumine the creation a billion years forward. In fact, years, past, present, future, are concepts that exist within the world of change. The self that illumines it, your being that illumines it, is not modifying, is not subject to change, it's not subject to time. So time exists within the perceived creation. Time is something that's objectifiable. So that's why you can say, and they even joke, if my mother said when she was very, very old and arthritic and not able to move very much, stuck in this old body, that was difficult to get around with. She said, it's so kind of strange to be in this body, honey. She goes, Todd, you know, because I'm the same. I'm the same one who was young. And now here I am. I can't believe it. Here I am in this old body. She doesn't have any Vedanta, right? Bertrand Russell or somebody said that also. You know, I am now, you know, captive in this old body. But I'm not old. I'm the same one. I was the same one that was there in the young body. You are the same. You're the same one who was in your last body, too. And the last body, and the last body. It's all the bodies to come, right? The you that is here now as the very self of this body is the self of 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, last body, last body, last body, last body. Right? And in the dissolution of the creation, there you are. Right? So that's what we mean by changeless, that which is not bound by any time at all. So your being, the being that is there when you say, I am, I exist, I am here, that self that you're referring to is ajaha, is something which is unborn and changeless. It's taken to be bound by change, bound by birth, bound by death, simply because of a identification with what you're actually objectifying. It's an identification with an object that you're very much aware of, and there before, during, and after any perception or any experience of this object, being the body or the thoughts in your mind or your sense organs or these perceptions of the world, you are the constant, right? You have to say that, because if you weren't the constant, you'd be gone. It's a stupid logic. It's a stupid means an obvious logic. It's so obvious that nobody thinks of it. You know, nobody thinks of it because it's too simple. But the fact is that you are the one who is present to all experience. All the experiences that you have, all of which have gone, they're gone. Right? The last moment is gone. And the world keeps racing by like that, experience after experience after experience after experience, thought after thought after thought after thought, physical condition after physical condition, physical condition. All of these things are racing and changing in your presence. You are the constant. And that's why that these things all come and go in your experience. You don't have any sense of loss. That's a very strange. There's no sense of loss. There's no sense of self. Right? No loss of self. No loss of the sense of your being at all. It's not touched. And that is the truth. It isn't touched. And because it's not touched, there's no sense of loss, no sense of non-being, no sense of change. The sense of change is always in the experiences that come and go, but you're always present to those experiences. Your mind may like or make judgments on the experiences, like my mother saying, what is this, being stuck in this old body? That's a judgment on an experience that she's having. But she also said, I, the one who is in this old body, I am the one who is in the young body. I haven't grown old. And that's her experience, and that's your experience also. Your experience is, I am the one who was happy yesterday, and I, the one who was so happy yesterday, am so sad today. or I who was sad and depressed yesterday, am now I am happy. The one who is sad is the one who is happy, right? The one who is young is the one who is old. That one is the same, right? The sadness is not the happiness. They negate each other. So it's very important. It's a no-brainer. Okay. These conditions continually negate each other. But present to all of these conditions is yourself that is stable and changeless. The wonderful thing about the mind recognizing this stable, changeless self that nobody can do anything about is that it can always, you can always rein it in, bring it home, right? Because the mind can get lost out here in samsara, you know, get all confused and entangled, you know. But you can say, wait a minute, what am I doing? And bring it home to the constant and realize, ah, I'm still there. Right? Nothing's happened to me. I'm the same. I'm present. I'm the same. So when your mind gets trapped in samsara, really because of lack of vairagya, that's what causes that. You know? In a given situation is a lack of vairagya. I need this to be happy. That's what it amounts to. I need Ishwara. I need the creation to be like this in this situation in order for me to be happy. The way that's going is upsetting for me. Right? That's because that my value system is there and I feel like the creation needs to accommodate me in this particular way or I can't be happy. That, you know? Actually, my ananda has nothing to do with the creation. It has to do... The ananda expressed in the mind has to do with the way you relate to the creation. If you say, if your mind says, I need this to be in a particular way so that I can be happy, if that's your belief, and the creation isn't performing for you, it's not doing it, right? Then what happens is that your mind gets into a mental state of agitation and tension, which is what we call pain. That mental state, when the mind becomes tense and agitated, gives us the pain experience. That's what it is. That's all it is. And then say, the situation that you need to be happy and is going wrong and causing you a lot of pain, reverses itself. And now it's going the way that you wanted it to go. And all of a sudden your mind just relaxes. And then all is well, thank God. All is well, you know. And so for this moment now, in reference to the situation, I get to have a little happiness. But what is really happening? What is really happening? It's just a mind who's made putting a judgment on the situation. It has to be this way so that I can be happy. Therefore, when it is that way, my mind relaxes and I'm happy. When it's not going along with me, my mind is tense, I'm unhappy. Because tense mind is the... You have to look at it like this. The tense mind... is the experience of unhappiness. Like that's what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not just some unhappiness out there. It is an affect that is caused by that stress and tension. So for a jnani, as you realize that whole psychodynamic, my mind stops asking the creation to be a particular way. So that I can be happy, because it recognizes that the locus of happiness is my own being and the mind. And the relaxation of the mind is what allows the mind to enjoy that. See, there's something to be understood there. So, it's just a little, I'm circling around, what I'm circling around here is, when your mind gets lost in samsara, you know, because of lack of vairagya, because I haven't assimilated my experience clearly in this particular area, my knowledge isn't holding firm in that area, all I need to do is bring my mind back to myself, to recognize, for the mind to recognize, well, nothing is happening to me. Nothing is happening to me. I'm fine. Even when your mind is all engaged in a mess, you know, you can just take a couple of deep breaths and look at yourself, the mind, differentiate that self. And you see, I'm exactly the same. I'm not miserable. I'm not happy in the sense of a vritti. the whole being that I am is there untouched, exactly the same. It's this self, your self, that is unalterable, that doesn't change, that the mind takes refuge in. That's where the mind takes refuge in, that stability. But that self has to be recognized. So here in this verse, they're saying that the self is ajaha. It's nityaha, unborn. It's nityaha. It doesn't die. And in between, shashwataha, it doesn't change. It's always fresh. It's always the same. You know? But this self, and this self, nahanyate, this self isn't killed. Hanyamane sharire. When the body is being killed, destroyed, nahanyate, this atma doesn't change at all. So even with the dropping of the body, if you understand, or not just understand, recognize the reality of your experience, that yourself does not change in the midst of your experience. That includes the experience of the world, but in the midst of your physical experience, the experience of your sense organs, the experience of your mind, all of these thoughts coming and going, all of these sensations, bodily sensations, coming and going, this whole aging process. If yourself is not changed by this, but remains as the constant witness, then what will ever make it change? See, if the self doesn't change, when these things are coming and going, if your being is stable and changeless now, what will ever make it change? Because if it's what we call asanga, if it has no attachment, you know, to the body now, or to the mind now, or to the sense organs now, what will make it have an attachment later? When the body dies, will all of a sudden it have an attachment? It has no attachment now. So when will it have an attachment? Right? This is the same thing to understand. When you go from the waking state to the dream state, to the deep sleep state, then back to the waking, dream, deep sleep. If we have these three, we call them avastas, these three states of experience. These three states of experience totally negate each other. That should be a problem for me if I have a sangha, any type of an attachment to any part of any given state, then when one disappears, I will disappear. But that isn't my experience at all. It's very useful for you to work with just like the waking state and the dream state, to juxtapose those two. Because the dream state, when you're having a dream, you at that time have no experience of the physical universe or the physical body. There's no attachment at all. And there's no perception of it. There's no use of it. So the physical world is gone, the physical body is gone, physical sense perception is gone. And a new universe has come, which from your vantage point, of the dreamer, it's not more subtle or more gross than the other universe. It's just, this is the reality now, when you're in a dream. But the two worlds negate each other, right? They're different worlds, and they're different upadis, there's different body, different physical body, different sense organs. You can be a different gender, you know? Or you could not be in the dream, you could not be embodied in the dream at all. But it is very clear to you in your spirit experience that I am the waker, and the one who is the waker in this waking state is the one who is the dreamer. That's not a confusion. We have no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But when we analyze it, you should have a doubt about it. Yeah. But you don't have a doubt about it because, in fact, the ahankara, the I notion, is rooted in the Atma. When you say I am, your sense of self is Brahman. It is the Atma, right? It's just that when you're in a waking state, that aham, Atma, that's me, is then identified with this body. When you're in a dream state, then this ahamatma is identified with another body. Or it's identified as Ishwara with a whole, right? It's identified with something. You know, or it just abides as pure knowledge, not identified with a body. But this is the thing. You are you, right? And the ahankara, the I notion, labels you as you. But who it's labeling as you, right, the you that it's labeling, is the you that you really are, which is Brahman, which is limitless, which is Ajaha, which is changeless. Your being is changeless. And so the ahankara properly labels you. I am. I exist. I am a conscious being. So it is the word for you. But then the mind and the body being here, right, which is not away from Chaitanya, not away from the awareful being that I am, why should that mind, which is thinking and not away from awareness, not say, I am the awareful being? Well, it does say that. Right? In this waking state, here I have a mind and sense organs, body, and so this mind, which is not away from Chaitanya, not away from consciousness, consciousness is its very being, right? Like the clay is the very being of the pot. And so that mind says, I am. I am the consciousness. And it's true. It is the consciousness. There is no other consciousness. There is no other me. So what it's saying is correct. In a sense, that the very being that it is consciousness. But the problem is that consciousness is not it. But that's the problem. Your mind is me. It has no other self. It is me. There's no distance between me and the mind. But I am not dependent on the mind. The mind is dependent on me totally. The mind is me. It's dependent on me. But I am not the mind. There's no dependency. It's not an equal relationship. It's like I say, the pot is dependent on the clay, but the clay for clay pot. Pot is dependent on the clay. Yeah. Pot is the clay. Can't you say that? The pot is the clay. You can't say the clay is the pot, right? Because the clay is independent of the pot. Right? But the pot's not independent of the clay, and the pot is the clay. So like that, my mind is the self. It is conscious. It is the conscious being. My body is the conscious being. There's no distance at all. But the conscious being that I am is stable. And does it take the form of this? Right? This is the very, has for its being me. But I don't have this for my, I'm not dependent on this for my being. And that is what this mind, your mind, needs to recognize. It needs to recognize that the me that it takes to be itself, because it is itself. Right? It is itself. It's just that this me is changeless and illumines it, right? It illumines it. And that's the relationship that has to be seen, that the I am, that the mind, when you say I am, those words are referring to the self that the mind enjoys and is totally identified with, but that this I am, the reality that the words are referring to, never changes. So it is the self of the mind, but the mind goes on changing, changing, changing. The self, which is its being, doesn't change at all. That you need to recognize in your experience. If you can recognize that, and it's there to be recognized, it's not somewhere else, it is your very self. And so when that's recognized, then you see this kind of strange relationship that we call satyam and mitya. That's the relationship between satyam and mitya. Satyam is the clay, mitya is the pot. That which totally depends for its being and has nothing else for its being, but it's dependent for its being, that is mitya. Satyam is the being which is independent. It's not dependent on anything. Mitya has dependent reality. Right? So pot is mitya. Clay is satyam. The whole jagat is mitya. Conscious being, consciousness is satyam. Right? The satchit. And so I now have to differentiate in my experience this conscious being that I am, this me, to recognize that it's not changing ever at any time. I am the constant. I'm the constant presence. You know, and that, when I recognize that, if I am the constant presence here, as the body goes on changing, my perceptions go on changing, my thought modifications go on changing, if I recognize the constant presence between the waking state and the dream state and the deep sleep state and then the waking, dream, deep sleep, I am the waker, I am the dreamer, I am the deep sleep, these totally negate each other. But for me, it's fine. I recognize that constant, what we call anuvritti, the constancy of my own presence. When I recognize that, then when the body dies, or drops, or is killed, the body drops. What about consciousness? Does the consciousness being the me that doesn't change in all the experience that I have here change when the body drops? Say no. That's why he says, this ayam atma nahanyate, this atma is not killed. It does not die. Right? Hanyamane sharire, when the body is being destroyed, nothing happens to the self. So that's this one. The next one. Te da vinashinam nityam. Te da vinashinam nityam. Yaenam ajamavyayam. Yaenam ajamavyayam. Katam sat purushav paratha. Katam sat purushav paratha. Kam khatayati hantikam. Kam khatayati hantikam. Veda avinashinam nityam. Yaha enam ajam avyayam. Katam sa purushaha artha. Kam ghatayati hantikam. Veda, may you know, avinashitam, may you know, Veda yaha, he who knows, Veda yaha, he who knows, avinashinam nityam enam ajam avyayam. He who knows this, enam atmanam, he who knows the self, right, to be avinashinam, indestructible, right, cannot. Vinashinam can be destroyed. Avinashinam, indestructible. Not subject to death. Cannot perish. Nityam, and therefore nityam, timeless, free from time. Ajam, free from birth. Avyayam, it doesn't decline. Okay? Avyayam navyeti means it doesn't wane, it doesn't decline. All of these things, again, shadvikaras, the shadbhava vikara. Vinashinam would be the miyate, and then with the nityam, and then ajam, avinashinam, and then avyayam. Avyayam is everything in between. Ajam, not born. Avinashinam, not destroyed. Nityam, timeless. And then avyayam, not waning. So remember, jayate, it comes into being. Jayate, asti, it exists. Vardate, it grows. Viparinamate, it goes through puberty modification. Apakshiyate, declines. And then vinashyati, destroyed. These are the shadbhava vikaras. So may the one who knows yaha veda, he who knows this atma, as being free from those modifications, from birth to death, from any type of waning in between, he recognizes oneself in that way. Katam saha purushaha he parta. He parta is a name for Arjuna. How does that person kill? How and whom come? How and whom does that person kill? Right? And how does that person cause anyone to kill? And to kill whom? So here it goes, saha purushaha, that person who knows this atma, this self, as changeless. So that person who knows this self in that way, he parta, Kam hanti. Whom does he kill? Katam. How does he kill? And whom does he kill? And kam ghatiyati. How does he cause somebody to kill? How does he kill somebody? How does he cause anybody to kill? Because the Atma is changeless. Yourself is changeless. It's not a doer. Right? There's no doership. So there's no becoming. There's no action. Nor is there any instigating of action. So this is a huge thing to actually see the repercussions of your own changelessness. What is changeless doesn't do anything. Right? If the instant it does something, it's changing. Right? So if it doesn't do anything or can't change, it can't do anything. If it can't do anything, it can't cause anybody else to do anything. Because then it would have to instigate. It would have to do something to instigate the action. Like Swamiji in his commentary says, you know, for instance, a bank robber. There can be somebody who goes in and robs the bank, but then there can be the mastermind who sets it up. And then there can be the driver, right? The driver who's waiting. The guy goes in and robs the bank, and the mastermind is sitting at home, who's planned the whole thing out, you know? Kind of the Ishwara of the robbery, right? The Ishwara of the robbery. But all of that requires activity. It requires doing. It requires thought. It requires even mental action. The Atma has no mental action. Atma is not thinking. Right? It's not thinking, how should I plan out this robbery? Well, let's have so-and-so go and do that and have so-and-so. That's all thought. You might be the Ishwara of the robbery or the Ishwara of the action that you're causing others to do. But that's all within samsara. That's all within the mind, right? Or within Ishwara himself. Ishwara himself is the Maya Upadhi. The self of Ishwara is Brahman, is Atma. The self of Ishwara also is not doing anything or causing anything to be done. The Atma is not, whether it's you're talking about the Atma as Ishwara, as Brahman, or the Atma of the individual. There is no action, nor is there any causing one to act. Just think. If you're ajaha, if you're unborn, right, not objectifiable, you don't change, you don't die, you're nityaha, free from time. Where is this, the sankalpa? You know sankalpa? The determination to do, even the sankalpa, the determination to do something. And then, if you're going to do something, that requires a determination on the mind, then what limbs are you going to use? Physical body? Physical body? Then Atma is the physical body. Right? What is the Atma going to use to form the sankalpa, to form the plan of the action? The mind? Then Atma is the mind. Self is the mind then. Right? But actually, the mind is drishya. The mind is something which is objectifiable. The mind is something which changes and comes and goes. The Atma remains the same. Right? That's why that meditation really is so useful, just to sit there and let your thought, watch your thought flow. You're not going along with the thought flow. The thought flow is going along. You're not going along. The Atma's not thinking. If the Atma was thinking, it would be going along with the thought flow. You see that? You remain constant. Right? If you were thinking, then who's illumining the thoughts? Right? But this means you are not a doer. Right? You're not a doer, nor are you causing anyone to do. Right? Because that also requires commitments and kalpa, thought, and then bodily action. Say you're causing somebody to do, don't you have to at least tell them? Well, that requires vak, that requires speech. Right? So all of these are upadhis, upadhi dharmas. So the Atma is not doing anything at all. So he says, for somebody who knows this, who knows the self as ajam, as unborn, as nityam, as avyayam, something that doesn't wane or change in any way, how can that self, how can the one who knows that self, now look, think of this, what this says. How can the one who knows the self, who knows, let me put it in this, how can I, if I know myself to be this, if I know myself to be this, how can I kill anyone? And how can I cause anybody to be killed? Let's put it this way. If I know myself, if I know that the self is changeless, how can I say that this self kills somebody or causes somebody to be killed? Who am I talking about? If I know the nature of the self, I can't say that about the self. Nor can I say that you are killed or you are dying or I am killed or I am dying. Because that was Arjuna's great fear, is all of these people are going to be killed and I am going to cause them to be killed, right? They're going to be killed, so they're all going to die, and I'm going to cause them to die. So here, Krishna is directly addressing this. The self does not die. Right? When the body dies, the self does not die. Right? So the one who knows this can't say that the self is going to die or that self is going to cause somebody to die. You can't say that about the Atma. So, I'm neither the killer nor the killed. Right? And the one who thinks, in the previous verse, the one who thinks I am the killer or the killed, that person doesn't know. Right? That person doesn't know the self. Never at any time, right, were you not, Krishna says in that previous verse, there's never any time when you were not, nor these kings were not, nor I was not. And there's never any time when you will not be, or all of these kings and all of these warriors, nor myself, there's never any time that I will not be. There is no such thing as death. It doesn't exist. Mm. Yeah, there's no such thing as death. It doesn't exist. You will never have a death experience because the Atma does not die. Now, you could say, the mind would go, yeah, the Atma doesn't die, but I do. No, because this body will die. Your thoughts and your mind will change. This body will die. But just as you go from waking state into dream, how there is no death experience, even though there's this total negation of this physical world and the body that you're identified with, you go into the dream. There is no death experience. That's perfectly fine for you. Right? Because nothing happens to you. Well, a heck of a lot is happening. Right? Really. In terms of your experience and identification, but nothing happens to you, and so there is no real transition. If there's no transition, because that dream state is as much part and natural to your experience as the waking state is natural to your experience, and there's not a ripple of change in the truth of it, the being of it, which is the Atma, which is changeless. And so like that, when this physical body dies, which is part of Ishwara, part of the Virat, part of the physical creation, when this physical body dies, right, then this is gone, but the sense of self, my being, is not gone at all. Then he'll get into the study of the Sukshma Sharira, goes on traveling, taking body after body after body. And for there's no sense of death or change either, because the Atma remains exactly the same. Right? So physical body is gone. This counter of experience is not there. It's not this physical body is a counter of experience for this waking state. When this physical body dies, then the subtle body then experiences whatever karmas are there to be experienced, will take another birth, etc. Go through this process of birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. But as all of this change is taking place, I am the constant being. I am the constant change itself. See that? What you need to do is, if you can recognize that reality here, in this experience, then there's nothing to do. There's no reason for that to be different later, right? Because the asangaha, the lack of attachment, the changelessness is present here, mm-hmm. right? In this experience, mm-hmm. it's present here from waking dream to deep sleep. It's present here just in the thoughts in your mind and the changing of your body and the changing of perception. That asangaha, that non-attachment, that stability, is reality right now. If that's reality right now, what will change that reality? See what I'm saying? What will change it?
Attachment.
But there is no attachment. Yeah. There would have to be an attachment. Mm-hmm. But you can't establish an attachment. Right? And so if there is no attachment and the attachment can't be established here, then when the body dies, the attachment that is not there is still not there. Mm-hmm. Right? So the stability of your being that is present here, recognized here, there is nothing that can take that away. Right? So what is where there's asanga, that asanga, if that asanga is there, when something that you are not attached to dies, it
makes no difference.
It makes no difference to the being which is stable. So that's why we go at this from so many ways to make you see that, in fact, you are not your body, mind, sense organs, and you cannot be. You have to recognize that, that there's logic to it, but the logic of it needs to be attached to the experience, right? Otherwise, it's just a belief. But we're not talking about belief here. We're talking about the reality of your experience. Because here you are as a conscious being. And in this moment of experience that you're having, there is the presence of yourself and everything else. And what falls into the category of everything else? Everything that you can be without. Everything that is dismissible. Everything that changes. Everything that comes and goes. Right? All of those things you cannot be. Because you're here and they're gone. Right? And so in your experience, letting the mind come into recognition or relationship with that which is changeless as opposed to identity. Right? It's recognizing the changeless and the changing as opposed to being identified with it. Until that identification is broken by the recognition of the changeless and the changing, then you are the body. That's how the buddhi, that's what the mind thinks. You are the body. You are the sense organs. Because there's identity as opposed to differentiation. Right? So it's identity in terms of your experience or differentiation in terms of your experience. Do you understand what I'm saying? You have to actually see the reality of it. This is why the, you know, japa is so useful, that repetition of a mantra. Because in the repetition of a mantra, you're able to replace just the wandering thought flow with a repeating mantra like Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. That repeating mantra replaces random thought flow, hot, cold, winter day, on and on and on. Okay? So you're still, you're controlling thought flow. Right? You still have thought flow, but it's controlled thought flow by the repetition of one thought, like a mantra, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. When you do that, repeat that, and you have a moment of silence, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, that moment of silence, right? The mind starts being put into a state where that differentiation between the awareful being and the thought becomes very vivid, becomes very focused and highlighted, right? Because what you see is that when you do the mantra, what starts happening is you're doing Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya Sam, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. what you start recognizing is that there's mantra silence, mantra silence, mantra silence. Then you start recognizing, no, there's silence, the silence of my own being, from which the mantra comes and resolves, comes and resolves. That's what you need to recognize. Then it becomes, that's what creates, allows you to put into slow motion the workings of the mind so that you can recognize no matter what the thought, what the emotion, because the mantra stands for any thought. Right? If I say Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, that's thought flow. Right? It's just that I'm breaking associative thinking that can give me a situation to allow, to highlight the underlying silence. That underlying silence is your own being, it's consciousness, your own presence. Right? So you need to be able to recognize that silent presence. Silent, changeless presence. And you can play with it. Once you recognize it, you can play with it. You can think all kinds of thoughts like, I don't exist, or try to shake it somehow. Try to touch it. Try to make it change. Try to make it move. Try to make it think. Try to make it do something. And it will never do anything. It's absolute, pure, silent wholeness. The wholeness which is you. It's also not anybody else. It's you. But you recognize that there's that you are changeless and nobody can do anything about it. You can't do anything about it. Nobody can do anything about it. But that, the freedom of yourself needs to be recognized. The mind needs to recognize it. Because the mind just now takes itself to be it. Once it recognizes it, then that understanding, you know, when this body dies, nothing happens to me. You know, that becomes very clear. The fact that right now, at this moment, you can recognize. I can recognize right now. Here this talk is going on. I'm not talking. The Atma is not talking. But the mind is talking. The mind with the sense organs, with the body, all kinds of things are happening in the creation. But yourself is silent. Right? Like your being is, so you're listening. Through your ears you're listening and you're getting thought modifications. So knowledge is being hopefully passed between teacher and student. Knowledge is taking place. But the Atma that's illumining this knowledge, the knowledge about itself, which these words are unfolding, is silent. Your being is silent and stable. You know? And whole, it's you, it's not somebody else, it's not some silent, stable, abstract thing. It's the silent wholeness and stability of your being, of me, of your own sense of self. That self can't be touched. It can't be objectified to be touched. Right? And so it's that self, knowing that self, I can't say I did this or I did that. I can't talk from the Atma. I can't talk from the position of the Atma and say, I am a doer, because it isn't true. I can talk from the position of the Upadhi and say, I'm doing this or I'm doing that, but not from the position of the Atma. That self can never be touched in any way. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
I know very often when we're using, we're talking about the self in relation to dream, and then, but I have had a few times in my life where I've managed to have something like a lucid dream.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm feeling a little bit of confusion between. It's sort of like the self versus the mind. There's some sort of that lucidity, you know, that knowing that I'm dreaming and being able to sort of.
Well, we use lucid dream a lot when we sometimes, if I'm talking about the dream as an example for understanding Ishvara, we use lucid dream because. There's the cognition of it being a dream. Whereas when you go, and which is the difference between Ishvara and the Jiva, for the Jiva there's ignorance, right? So when you go into the dream, normally, that's just your reality, you're identified with an individual within the dream. For Ishvara, that's not the case, it's infinite knowledge. And so it's more like a lucid dream. But the fact still remains that in the lucid dream, there's not the waking state, right? And there's not identification with the physical body or with your sense organs. Mm-hmm. There's recognition of the dream, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that the self is the same in both, even though the situation is totally different.
Similar fashion, it's I've also been knocked unconscious. I've been in a coma before when I was a child and I had a bicycle accident. And I woke up the next day and I was aware when I woke up that I was in a new place, that a period of time, that it wasn't the time when I lost consciousness, but so I was aware that the time had passed. But I completely lost that whole day. I was gone.
Right, but in deep sleep, that's why we use these three states, waking, dream, and deep sleep. Deep sleep would include coma or states of experience where the mind is not active. Whereas in dream, it can be dream, daydream, just fantasizing. Those states of experience where you're not using your sense perception. Right. And waking state is where you're using your sense perception. Right. So in the waking state, you could have what we categorize as that dream state by daydreaming. You know, because you're engaged with your mind, but you're not engaged with the world through the sense perception. So.
Going back to what you talked about at the beginning about aging, I was wondering if maybe some of our resistance to aging is actually because the self is, because the truth is that we are timeless. And so the decay of the body doesn't reflect that. So there's a sense of that myself is the one that was young and vibrant. And
yeah, and also there's no way to really relate to death. It's like the body growing old and then dying, all of the vikaras, you know. And when you start getting older and the body is not functioning anymore, nothing's happening to you, and then you're supposed to die at the end. It doesn't compute, you know. But that's our experience. But it's not it. It's our experience, what we see through our sense organs. But it's not our inner experience of ourself. Yeah. There's a disconnect there. Right. Yeah, I agree.
I guess you know what the continuity is, you know, like say you have an experience, like you go to sleep at night, mm-hmm. you wake up,
mm-hmm.
you know that the person who went to sleep and the person who wakes up is the same person.
Yeah.
But I guess almost like my mind goes, but what about in between? It's like...
Well, the difference is in the deep sleep, why the deep sleep is different than the dream is because the mind itself is in what we call avyakta. It's in its causal condition. And so when the mind is in its causal condition, there is no marking of time, right? Because the mind is causal, so there's no duality there. There's no ahankara there because the mind is causal.
So no I notion?
No.
No I notion.
No I notion. Just like now, but look, right now, you don't have to have an I notion. You don't have, your ahankara is not walking around, I am. You know, it's you, that thought comes.
Mine does.
The thought isn't there. The reality, the self of the thought is always there. The self of the thought is always there. But the labeling, I am doing this, I am doing that, that is not always there.
Mm-hmm.
But the self is always there, which the ahankara labels.
Mm-hmm.
But when the mind is in unmanifest condition, in the deep sleep, there is no marking of time, there is no ahankara, there is no experience of duality. There's no loss of self, right? And there's no marking of time. So between those, the waking and the, if it's a deep sleep, or say if you're an anesthetic where you're really put out, you close your eyes and you open them. There could be hours that have gone by. In anesthetic, mm-hmm. hours that have gone by. But there's no marking of time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you're deep sleeping, you're not deeply asleep, so there's some subtle marking of time. A sense of time passing. But that's because you're not fully asleep. You're still, you know, have some minimal consciousness there. Then there'll be a very subtle marking of time. But if the mind is totally in deep sleep, close your eyes and open them. No marking of time at all. But now, from the standpoint of the self, there is no time. Right? So whether there's marking of time or not, that all belongs to samsara. From the standpoint of the self, it's irrelevant. There's no such thing as time. So it can be, you get caught with this idea of deep sleep because there's no one there saying, I am deep sleeping, and there's no time, what happened during that time. Well, there's a lot that happened in the empirical world during that time and for the people that were watching you sleep. But from your experience, when the mind is in unmanifest condition, right, there's no marking of time at all. Because, right, there's no I notion there, there's no seer seen relationship, there's no duality.
But you can be awake at the same time and not have the notion that, the I notion, the presence of me, it's just available, but without any identity or label. I mean,
yes.
It's the same kind of state as in deep sleep.
No, because now your mind is awake, right? And so it's having an experience of the universe and through your sense perception, so the mind is awake.
But I'm not attached.
Yeah, you're not attached. Okay. Now, that's right, you're not attached. Your being is the same. When you're in deep sleep, the mind is in unmanifest condition, so there's no commentary, there's just what we'd say pure ignorance there, the objecta condition, there's just pure ignorance. So now the me, your own presence, is still there in exactly the same way. But the mind is not in a state to make any comment on that or to have any type of experience. Right? There's no passage of time even for the mind because there's no duality at that time. You know, and so the mind goes into a manifest condition and comes out of it. All the while, that complete unmanifest condition is being illumined by the self. That's why when you come out of the unmanifest condition and the mind is thinking again, it'll say things like, I had the deepest sleep last night, you know. And then describe that, what that state is like. Because of memory. It remembers that state, just like it remembers the dream. Right? Just like it remembers what you did yesterday. Whatever state the mind is in, that becomes, you know, when it's past, goes into the memory banks. And you can recollect. If you have nirvikalpa samadhi, a meditative experience, you know, where your mind is totally absorbed, just Brahman, you're just as yourself. When the mind comes back into duality, engaging in the world, in the waking state, it remembers that condition of when it was in that nirvikalpa state. Mm. Because the mind doesn't, you don't lose the mind. If you go into nirvikalpa, non-dual, samadhi, meditative state, or if you go into deep sleep, your mind is still there. In a sukshma, it's called ati sukshma vritti, very subtle vritti. In samadhi, in deep sleep, in the dream, mind is still there. In the waking, mind is still there. And so you recall it from memory.
So then what happens in nightmares, for example, because there's a whole other kind of dimension that kind of seems like, I mean, this is just kind of the traumatized mind now that adds another dimension to the dream?
Well, a nightmare is still a dream. It's just a nightmare dream, right? It's still a dream.
But it's like, you know, it just kind of gains so much, yeah, it's true in a certain way, but I think it's also, there's a certain kind of, it's not just for, it's, for the person who has a nightmare, there seems to be a very strong link to their waking state. You know, because it's like, it seems like there's a projection that is so tied together with their waking state.
Well, I think that's true with a lot of dreams, right? Because the dreams are really made of the citta, the mind stuff. Mm-hmm. Right, so say you've had, say for instance, I mean nightmares can, anything, a lot of things can cause nightmares, but say you've had some trauma in your life that caused you to have repetitive nightmares repeating that trauma. Right? Well, it's because the stuff of the mind, like the citta, that's where the memories are stored, is what is used for the dream stuff. And say there's a lot of affect with images, also there's a lot of affect in the psyche that'll also get blasted out in the dream. So the dreams are, you know, come from our experience in the waking state and maybe even in more other subtle realms of experience that we've had also. You know, that's where you can have big dreams or, you know, you can be drawing on other sources, but a lot of it is...
It's kind of a downloading of excess mental energy in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a certain way, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Sometimes it seems like there's some quality of experience that hasn't been digested, that a dream is like, or a nightmare, is the mind's trying to digest some difficult experience.
That's true. There's a lot, I mean, especially in the West with Jung and Freud, and for me with studying Jung, we've done a lot of work with dreams. But that's not the point in Vedanta.
Yeah.
Not that it's not interesting to talk about, but you have to understand that in Vedanta, the dream is used as a device to make you recognize the changelessness of the self. That the self of the waker is the self of the dreamer. Is the self of the deep sleeper. That's what it's used for. If we get into dream analysis, then we're getting into psychology and prophecy and things like that. That's that. Now we're back in the realm of samsara. That's interesting, but...
It's off topic.
Oh, yeah, but it's not necessarily even off topic unless you don't understand that, you know.
The self, so at this point, at least from what we were just studying, the self that it is speaking of is this transcendent self,
the Atma.
The Atma. Whereas, is it also acknowledged in Vedanta at some point that the non-transcendent self does die with the body? So there's like that.
No, there is no non-transcendent self.
Yeah.
That what you think is going to die is Brahman. That's the whole thing. What you fear and think about yourself is going to die, that is exactly what is not going to die. That's exactly what doesn't die. Yeah. There's no
separation.
Mm-mm.
I see.
There's no separation. There's only that one self.
But in our fears, there is a separation.
Absolutely. That's why people feel bound and want liberation. You know, that's the problem. Yeah.
That's where it lives. Yeah.
But it's also, the whole transmigration of the Atma.
No. Atma doesn't transmigrate.
Okay.
Subtle body.
Okay. So, just the fact that there is a transmigration of the subtle body, it's really hard. You can't really know that. You can only, there's a certain conceptualization that kicks in at certain
there,
point.
That's where some belief comes in.
Yeah.
And it makes sense.
That's where I recognize in myself, my own mind starts to doubt and says, well, you don't know that, it's like, that sounds kind of good, but it's like, you don't know that, it's like, and so there's a certain kind of, so when, in this chapter that we just studied, and, where Krishna says, hey, it's like, nothing dies, nothing is born, there's nothing in between. And certainly that makes total sense, but if I really try to line that up with my actual experience, from a conceptual standpoint, I really like it. I think that's wonderful.
No, it does line up with your experience, that the changelessness of the Atma lines up with your immediate direct experience. That's not belief.
Right, in this moment, but I'm just saying, once I'm dying, or this body dies, at that point, I have no clue. It's like, I just got to acknowledge that there's going to be a place and time where there's just not knowing. Instead of just saying, well, the Atma will always be there. It's kind of hard to actually explain that. Because in a certain way, I totally get where you're coming from. So it's not like I don't understand what you're talking about. But when I'm looking at my own experience and I tune in on how this journey is going to continue, if I want to really embrace the totality of everything,
yeah,
and I want to apply your teaching to that, then I'm starting to lose a little grounding or so in my own shape-shifting there. You know what I mean? It's like,
I do.
I don't know how to explain that.
I think that I know. There's what is direct, immediate knowledge,
mm-hmm,
that is present now. It's not a matter of what's going to happen when the body dies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's understanding the recognizing the nature of the self and the nature of the creation is mithya.
Mm-hmm.
The satyam, the changelessness of my being and the mithya of the creation. That there's no possibility this creation cannot touch me.
Mm-hmm.
I can have direct, immediate knowledge of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can have direct, immediate knowledge that that will always be the case, whether this body is here or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, say we get into the nature of Ishwara, mm-hmm, and the nature of the transmigration of the jiva, which means the sukshma sharira and all,
mm-hmm,
that.
Right.
All of that makes tremendous sense. It's logical. It works. But then I have to understand it. I don't directly see it because I can't see myself transmigrating. I have to say, well, that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And in the bigger scheme of things, I can understand how that's how it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it works for me emotionally in all ways. So, yeah, I see that. That's fine. I accept that. But that is a different type. That's what we call indirect knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Right? But that is different than direct, immediate knowledge,
mm-hmm,
which is the satya-mitya relationship of the creation and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can know without any doubt And that extends beyond this body, beyond this moment. Once I understand that relationship. And understand it means it's not just intellectual, I see it.
Yeah, so my question is just one little extra thing here. If I really now take this to a max, this inquiry, what we're just having here, and I step out the door and somebody comes along and puts a gun in my head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then in that moment, I kind of imagine if I have really integrated this understanding, what we're talking about, I would be actually fearless. I mean, there's got to be, or is it just that there is it just that the body itself now has its own fear? But, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, if I'm so aligned with that truth. Like what Arjuna also talks about, hey, just go for it, you know, kill your relatives. It's all kind of like a cosmic joke because, you know, it's really...
Well, that's not the... You have to be careful. It's not go for it, kill your relatives. It's that in this situation, your dharma
right.
is to fight this dharmic war.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. So go and fight your war.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I'm not excluding that.
Okay.
I'm aware of that completely.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But I'm just saying, So what then is that just kind of told? Would that always be there, this fear contraction?
Yeah.
Because there's a sensory kind of identification with the body dying? Or am I still not quite...
No,
that knowledge not integrated itself?
No, that should always be there because it's the what do you call that, the different systems mm-hmm. in the body will just snap. Yeah, fight or flight, it'll just naturally happen. But your mind won't build up around that. You know, in other words, say somebody comes with you with a gun, and you have a way to knock it away or to save yourself. You certainly will do that,
mm-hmm.
and move into action. You know, because that's the body, and that's exactly what you would do in that type of circumstance. Yeah, it's a natural thing. They even have a joke, not a joke exactly, but a story mm-hmm. about this Dwaitin. In Rishikesh, a Dwaitin and Advaitin were having a debate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the Dwaitin's on this side, the Advaitin's on this side. And some tiger or something comes, you know, stalking, and starts to charge, right? And so everybody scurries, including the Advaitin, you know, the one who was debating. He scurried and scurried up a tree. And then when the tiger left, they all, you know, regrouped and came back down together. And the Dwaitin said, you know, look at what you did. You know, you're all talking non-duality and everything, and look at how you just shot up the tree, you know. And so the Dwaitin said something to the effect, you know, mitya tiger, mitya tree, mitya screwing up the tree, you know. But that's the truth of it, really. I mean, that would be the appropriate response. But then there's nobody inside who's saying, oh, I don't have self-knowledge because I'm screwing up the tree. You're screwing up the tree to save your life. You know, to save the life of the body, your life. Right? And at the same time, the Atma never dies.
Yeah, and you're not... But, you know, I guess the question comes from that place of, if you really understand it fully, that you're not the body... You know,
yeah, but then I wouldn't be talking. Why am I talking?
Because, that's a good question, too.
Right? Because, see, as long as you have the prarabdha, as long as you have this body, you know, you talk, you have friends, you have, you know, relationships, you work, you clean your house, you go shopping,
mm-hmm.
you know. You try to drive carefully. You protect your health. It's all just the human condition.
Yeah.
But along with that human condition is a knowledge and a recognition of that which is not shopping. And that's the one who's not house cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
And the one who's not running up the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because otherwise you're saying, okay, if I really had a knowledge, if I see the tiger... I would just sit there and let it come and get me.
Yeah, it doesn't quite make sense. So.
No, that's also bizarre behavior.
But then you do get people like, like during Vietnam War, you had those Buddhist monks, and perhaps they did to some extent have such conviction out there.
Well, that's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
They had conviction, you know.
Set themselves on fire.
They gave their life for a conviction. That's totally different, you know.
You know, Carol, today you were saying that the mind is being. You know, that it is.
Yeah.
Being isn't the mind, but the mind is being.
That's right.
And so, you know, so much of the time we spend doing that differentiation between sattva and nitya. But then the nitya mind is really being. So.
But it has to understand that
right.
It is the mitya mind.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I wonder is, like, the mitya mind, the mitya body. I guess I was thinking, well, this must be my usual question in a way, just reformed. But so at some point it becomes evident that the mitya mind and mitya body also are being. You know, not that Satyam is the body, but that the body, you know, that mitya, even of the body and the mind, because we spend so much time separating them.
But you have to separate them to see it.
Yeah.
You have to. Otherwise, it's taken as one.
Yeah, but when you do separate them and you say you do see it, and then, but then you don't. Maybe you don't see that the mitya is such an yet, or that the, I mean, that must be, like, important to see that the mind is being also, that its being is being, the being of the mind is being. Yeah.
That the being of the mind is the Atma.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you have to see.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's not enough, it could be anyway, but. Yes.
Well, I know. Yeah, I mean, you worry about that there's some sort of a distance, or the way that I'm teaching it makes some sort of a
distance. I feel like my own experience is that there's a distance. And I know that somehow I have to put this back together.
But we don't have an experience of distance.
Yeah.
We have an experience of the changeless and the changing.
Yeah.
But not an experience of distance.
No. But it feels like a switching back and forth of recognizing, okay, that's changing, this isn't, that's changing, this isn't.
Well, maybe initially your mind is kind of going back and forth to notice, oh, yeah, that's, I'm not changing and this is changing. Oh, yeah, I'm not changing, this is. But after a while, you don't have to say that. That's just a fact of it. Initially you say it and you're telling yourself that and noticing it, because before you didn't notice it. Before there was just identity.
Right.
Then you start noticing, oh yeah, yeah. And then that becomes a natural recognition of the changelessness of your being and the changing of everything else. You know? But it's not natural initially. And that's why.
You mean the differentiation?
The differentiation is not natural initially. It's because of the identification is so thorough, you know.
But the changing of everything else is still somehow my being. It's still it still has for its being Satyam.
That's right.
And that somehow, I guess I'm trying to see, like, if there's some way to see that in relationship to the body and mind that's easier than to see it in relationship to other things in the creation.
No, at the moment of death, right? If one hasn't realized that one is the self, at the moment of death, the information alone could help you be free, not to come back anymore.
Yeah, it could actually. It's called Videha Mukti. When there's can be what's called like a Krama Mukti. Say, for instance, you've been taught, and things haven't been completely gelled, right? But at the time of death, enough could have gelled for you to then, you know, kind of have a gradual moksha. They talk about that. Because then you see it. But say, even for a person who has total ajnanam, total ignorance, no self-knowledge at the time of death, there's no death for them either. There's no death, period. So for them, they're still identified with a subtle body.
Right, that makes it come back.
Yeah. But even though they're identified with the subtle body, still there is no death experience for the self. So that's a kind of just the phenomena of it.
So for a person that dies with self that's still ignorant, does the ahankara just immediately then jump on to the subtle body?
Yeah, the ahankara, you have to remember, the ahankara has its attachment with the Atma, right? I am. And then, just like when you go to dream, it'll be attached onto whatever upadhi is there, just naturally. But it's rooted in the Atma, right? And then if this upadhi, say I fall asleep and take, go in a dream and take on another upadhi, then that's what I am. Right? It's very smooth. It's a very, very smooth because the Atma is changeless. Right? And so the ahankara doesn't feel any, nothing happens to it because itself is always the same. So it will never have, or it'd be more like, oh, I'm not dying. Yeah.
That's why there's so much confusion about the ego, right? Because it just kind of rides on the wave of the Atma.
That's right. I mean, the ego has the self for is itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like the self of the ego is the Atma,
mm-hmm.
right? The changeless Brahman.
But then, how can you get rid of the ego, right? I mean, there's this whole concept of trying to.
You don't need to get rid of the ego.
Yeah, right. But I'm just saying that's kind of something that
takes
that approach.
Yeah. How are you going to get rid of it?
Yeah.
You get rid of it by. You don't get rid of it, you give it knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So that it realizes, instead of I am the body, it realizes I am Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
As long as there's a mind there, there'll be an I there. But where does the I land?
Mm-hmm.
It lands on the Atma.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah. Let's call it a night.
Thank you.
Welcome.